You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your daily source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football, Grandstand Sports Network. Follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. Follow the Locked On Eagles account at Locked On Eagles. As always, I am joined by the best co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day, DJ Frog with Pockets. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter.
What is DJ Frog with Pockets, man?
That's from the Friday show, man. Yeah, if a frog had pocket, it would carry a knife, stab the snake before it ate it. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. This is a weird intro because I am all out of sorts due to this loss to the Seahawks. 24-10 is your final.
Yeah.
And Ben, how you doing, man?
Yeah, we always good days. Never a bad day. But it's weird. We haven't had to do this after a loss since September, and that was a little bit different because we faced what was considered the best team in the NFL, the Chiefs, and we lost to them. And then you go on this big, 8-9 game winning streak. Now, kind of after a loss, you feel a little bit deflated. But I'm here to tell you right now that if you're worried about this team's long-term projection, It's okay. Like, take a step away from the ledge, right? I'll kick it off just simply by saying I thought the Philadelphia Eagles played a much better football game than 24-10 would have you see. Mm. So 14-point deficit at the end of things. Obviously, there'll be some complaining about the refs, which Eagles could have won this game regardless of the right calls. They had every opportunity. But you have a pretty significant pass interference call in Darby that seemed to be a little bit ticky-tack that leads to a touchdown. You have a fumble at literally the 1-yard line, which is very upsetting. That's tough.
The holding call on Jeffrey.
Right. Yeah, and that takes away points as well. It's a very good point. Magical third down conversions by Russ. Whether that lateral was forward or not, whether or not it should have been challenged. Really, this game broke on big plays and it broke Seattle's way, which is pretty common for a home team. That's not terribly surprising. I can tell you right now, I don't think you can. I'll put 21 players in the Eagles played as fine as they always have. Carson Wentz regressed, and we'll talk about Carson Wentz's performance in a little bit. But I think that the Eagles played a fine game, and I don't think there's any reason to say that they're not still the top team in the NFL, just plainly speaking.
Yeah, and here's the thing. We've talked about it before. This team needs to see some adversity, and we'll see how they respond to this, not only in a close game, but also responding from a close loss as well. I thought they had a lot of fight in them. I'm proud of that fact. And like you said, the long-term future of this team is being a very good football team, and that's what we should take away from this. And also, like you said, this is not on the refs. There were 11 points taken off the board by the Eagles directly. The fumble by Carson Wentz on the 1-yard line cost us potentially 7 points. The holding by Alshon Jeffrey when he didn't need to cost us potentially 4 points because we kicked a field goal after that. That's 11 points on the board that would have changed the entire landscape of this game.
If Carson Wentz's scramble is 1 yard longer or his elbow is down 3/4 of a second earlier, the Eagles are very likely tied with Seattle in the third quarter.
It happens.
Right. And you can go the other way with that, right? There's a very good chance the Eagles were not going to put 7 points on the board if not for two insane Carson Wentz plays on the same drive, right? Those throws were nuts. But this game, in no way, shape, or form did Seattle manhandle, dominate, control Philadelphia. Carson struggled. Doug struggled a little bit there at the end of the first half, I thought. Thought Big V struggled a little bit. And then I thought you had some defenders make some questionable decisions, which will happen against Russ. I'm perfectly fine with that. They were to play again, if they were to play 100 times, I think you'd be like 50-50 split. This game fell Seattle's way. Right. I thought performance was fine. I'm moving on,
Yeah, we are on to Los Angeles, really, but we do have to talk about this game, so let's talk about it. Let's go back to the beginning of the game, and what I found interesting was I dropped a piece on this for LockedOnEagles.com. It was about how the Seahawks should use read option more often because that really is going to supplant the run game. And what I found was, at least while I was charting, I don't know about the very end of the game, but they ran read option or option concepts with the run under 50 times for the season. It was like 48 or 49. I can't remember the exact number, but they ran it 7 times this game. They started the game out with it. They had a 7-yard gain on the first play. And that was something that the Eagles had struggled with against Cam Newton, against Dak Prescott. So the Seahawks used it early. They used it often, not only just keeping it, but handing it off as well. We had spies on early with Najee Good, with Nigel Bradham. Kendricks was doing a little bit as well. And it looked like it was working. But at the same time, you've got the magic of Russell Wilson. Wilson, man. He's okay. What I want to talk about real quick, and you pointed this out on Twitter, the impatient play calling on defense when we're getting home with four, and at the very least, you and it affects coverage when you spy the quarterback. You're going to get some off coverage. So the Seahawks were moving the ball early with that, with some of the off coverage, but it was effective. You're bottling up Russell Wilson. You're giving up the 5 to 6 yards to live with not getting hit up by the big plays. The big play for me was Rodney McLeod on Doug Baldwin when the game started getting out of hand for us a little bit. We played cover zero, and it didn't seem like we needed to on 3rd and 10, and that's what really got this game ahead for the Seahawks. I mean, I get wanting to be aggressive, but at the same time, we could have got there with three. You know what I mean? Why leave McLeod in that situation where that's putting him in a bad situation?
I think that's often a case of not thinking yourself. You know, in the sense that you feel as if you need to do something different on a crucial down, because if you keep on throwing the same stuff you've already done, they're going to have the perfect play call dialed up to combat it, right? And so you get ahead of yourself in that regard. It could also be, and I had this experience of Doug and Schwartz, in this case's calls in the second half, very much like they were real hungry for momentum, they felt very desperately they kind of needed to break something, they needed a spark. You know, I thought that the Schwartz call, you say, oh, I need a sack, you know, to help kick him out of field goal range, and it'll get the defense going and everything. Well, that's a high risk, high reward situation. You know, I thought going for it on 4th and 3 there in the near red zone, they were, I think, around the inside the 30, I think it was. You know, I would have taken the 3 there, get some points on the board, you know, kind of change the game script looking forward, help your team set that up. That would have been my call. You know, I don't know about you.
See, but I'm going to disagree with you here, because I think that we've executed this play before and we've done it successfully. We've leaked out Celek on plays like this on 4th down in short yardage. We leaked out Barner on this play. He kind of got caught up. The pressure beat us. Sometimes the other team just has a better execution than we have. We had the right play call on, so I can't put too much on Doug Peterson for that. So I think it was a good call. You know what I mean? Like, okay, so we kick a field goal, it's still a 2-score game. So you got that going for you. Mm-hmm. We've been aggressive all year, which is why it was surprising for me that we punted in those situations early in the game. But I felt like we got back to what worked for us in that situation. In hindsight, as far as that goes, and I'm not calling you out for this because I see your point, but hindsight is 20/20 when you see the execution of it and it doesn't work. The Seattle Seahawks just beat us on that play. It's worked for us pretty much all season.
Absolutely. It was a good play call. The missed execution. You know, some folks saying, why is Barner in there? Because Barner's a good pass catching back. Yep. And that was a good call. And like, that was fine. Barner in space. He's our punt returner. That's a pretty ideal situation. Good play call. You know, again, that's another great example of just Eagles failed to execute. That's a play they usually get that they didn't. You know, I liked going for 3 there. You're at 17-6. You tell your defense, all right, we're driving down there. We put some more points on the board. Go get us a stop. They do. And the Eagles got that ball back 17-3. They end up scoring the touchdown, making it 17-10. You score that touchdown, you're at the point where you could make it 17-14 with a 2-point conversion. Now it's a 3-point game. That was my thought looking forward. Kind of, you know, obviously that's a 3-possession sequence there. But that was where I was simply thinking. We should talk Carson Wentz, though. One of his best nights as far as the stat sheet goes, 348 yards, 29 for 45. Two of his biggest passing yard attempts this year have come in the losses. It was against the Chiefs and against Seattle.
Yeah, and early he seemed a little jacked up. And we've seen this from Wentz. He seemed a little wound tight in the beginning of the games. And he sailed a wide open one to Nelson Aguilar early in the game. Later on, when the clutch situation was on and the 3rd and 13... the 3rd and 14, when he had to go out and make a play, he made a play. You know, he did his job in that regard, but I felt overall it was a very uneven performance from Wentz. And like you said, it's going to look great in the stat sheet. That's not what I'm concerned about. I'm more of a tape guy. Evaluate what you saw on tape, and I thought there were areas where he struggled in the game, not only with his placement, but also with some of his decision making. And this is not to say that Carson Wentz is a bad quarterback all of a sudden. Let's not everybody freak out, but there were plays that were left on the table. What did you think, Ben?
No, most definitely. And obviously, two misses to Aguilar, one of which was a completion, but the ball was short, and then one that was over his head. Both cases, opportunity for huge yak stick out. I'll tell you right now, you know, why over deep crossing concept can be very tough for quarterbacks to throw. Oftentimes, they're coming over to that progression late. It's one of the later progressions, so their body might not be in the correct positioning. They might not have a clean platform. That's number one. I can't remember out of the top of my head whether or not, you know, Carson had those in those situations. But number two, that route can bend, right? Depending on where coverage is, that player can get upfield or that player can become more shallow. He can become more horizontal. And you got to be on the same page with him. We haven't seen that route very often from Aguilar this year. It's been one they've ran previously a lot. I believe that Washington touchdown, that first touchdown Carson threw this year, was on a similar route. Aguilar also had a touchdown against the Giants on a similar concept. Again, coming from the opposite side of the field, crossing over into the deep third. Sometimes you're off on those, you know, and Carson was off on these, you know, so that's a tough route to read. Some balls just got away from him a little bit. There was a curl to Alshon Jeffrey where he was open, where the ball was outside. It stuck out. That could have been a third down conversion, that third and three to Ertz where he got concussed. And we need to talk about Ertz missing that Rams game potentially. Yeah. But that Ertz ball was to the incorrect side. That was where the corner had leverage. If you put that ball a little bit more behind Ertz, it's a much cleaner opportunity for him to catch it. Just off, you know, and Carson's not the most accurate dude in the face of the planet. And Carson is not the most subtle mover in the pocket. I think he struggled. You know, he's good at breaking the pocket. Right. It's a tough distinction, but it's important, right? When Carson Wentz feels pressure, he can escape, but he rarely, you know, kind of climbs the pocket or shifts in the pocket and stays inside. It's not his game. It's fine. But sometimes that gets him in trouble. His feet will get stuck in the mud, and that's less than ideal. We've talked a little bit on the show before. I know that I've talked about it. You kind of expected a bit of a Carson Wentz regression. This looked a lot more like rookie Carson than it did second-year Carson. Of course, this would have been one of rookie Carson's best games, in my opinion. But this was a high-pressure situation. He was trying to do a lot. He definitely felt the weight of the game on his shoulders. And in my opinion, you know, his game stepped back a little bit. Again, no reason for panic.
Yeah, and from an execution point, I would agree with you there. But then you look at the things like we used a lot of run-pass options early. And I thought that Wentz was making really good decisions in that area. So I thought that's not going to show up on the stat sheet. However, I thought he was making the right reads because we had a drive early in the game. Ajayi, Wentz, and Clement really contributed on the ground. Then we had some plays to Jeffrey. That was the play that set up where Blunt broke and Jeffrey had the holding call. So that was that drive. And I thought he did a really good job of managing the game in that situation. Yeah, like you said, up and down performance. You're going to expect these things from a young team. Looking forward, the picture is not exactly bleak. And one of the things that we highlighted before the game was Malcolm Jenkins versus Jimmy Graham. This was early in the game on the Seahawks' third drive. You get Jenkins one-on-one with Graham. This was after the Darby pass interference, which I thought was a very bad call. And look, we are not here. At least I'm not anyway, and I know Ben isn't too far on the hyperbolic side of things when it comes to the referees. The Darby call was garbage. That was a very well-played ball. The holding call on Bradham after that was extremely justified. He held the crap out of the running back trying to release into his route. So then you follow up with getting Jenkins versus Graham in the red zone. Graham wins. Graham is a big time
great ball
red zone threat. So Graham was, you know, 1-0 in that situation. So this defense gets to Wilson consistently, but Wilson somehow always finds a way to escape and make plays. And even with the one with the lateral, even if forget the fact that the ball traveled forward a half a yard or a yard, which I think it clearly did, and it should have been reviewed. And I don't know if that's on Doug Peterson, that's on the booth, wherever it needs to come from. I felt that should have been reviewed.
Right. Whenever people get mad at Doug Peterson for that, I get so confused. Literally, it's not his job. Doug right. gets called by somebody in his headset that says, yo, challenge that. I don't know who that dude is. And again, I always joke around that they don't picture him for a very particular reason, because if they did, we'd all kill the guy. We'd find him in Philly and massacre the guy responsible for making these calls. But he didn't call it down in time for whatever reason. It's not Doug's fault. Yelled somebody else. That's my spiel.
Yeah, I put it on Twitter in my reactionary phase. I said that's on Peterson. Shame on Peterson for not reviewing that. Looking back on it, it's a bad tweet. You know, that's a reactionary fan.
Hey, you got to fire off those tweets, man. You got to fire off.
Yeah, you got to get the likes and all that stuff. You got to be like, I'm not even going to say his name. Okay. So I thought it was a forward pass, but either way, even if he throws that flat, that's a first down. We still have to execute. And that's what I'm saying. We're not going to blame the refs here as far as the Eagles executing in this game. So we're going to move forward from that. Okay. So later on in the game, we're down 14. What did you see from this Philadelphia team from a competitive toughness, from a mental toughness standpoint?
Felt good. They came out on that first drive out of the half. Carson was immediately in rhythm. I talked a lot during my halftime periscope that I do during the Eagle games about the need to get into rhythm. that Wentz was very much out of sync, and you know folks wanted the deep shot, and I was saying you got to get him moving first, you got to get the juices flowing a little bit, and they did that immediately, come out targeting Zach Ertz after he didn't get the targets, quick run with a giant, another one 10 yards down the field for Ertz, looking for Alshon, getting the big guys involved. You know, so you go ahead, you have that Torrey Smith, you have the challenge, which that was another questionable situation. You get all the way down, first and goal at the Seattle 4. Carson goes to make one of his heroic plays. He's made so many of them this year, and this one doesn't work. That's very unfortunate. You know, if only Carson could have fumbled on a heroic play, you know, against the Bears when we were already up by 17, you know, but he did it in Seattle when we were down 14 trying to claw back into the game. That's heartbreaking. But they came out very focused. Immediately in rhythm, clearly believed they were still in this game. Philadelphia was still in this game all the way until that last drive that ended over on downs, you know. And even then, there was about, 2 minutes, 15 seconds left. They were technically going to get the ball back because they had timeouts. But they were in this game the whole way because they were moving the football very effectively. Again, Philadelphia, 4 trips to the red zone at one point, 2 turnovers, 3 points, right? Before that eventual touchdown drive to Aguilar. This team has been very effective in the red zone. Tonight, not so much. Mistakes, penalties, weren't able to pull it off. Again, very much like, you know, remember when we were really worried about the false starts and the fumbles from, a week ago? Those issues did not show up in this game. We're in Seattle where there should have been more false starts. And there were, you know, they had the Carson Wentz fumble, but that was the only one. Right. Bad game. No reason to be concerned. Obviously, the Los Angeles game takes on a little bit more meaning now. Most certainly. You don't want to drop another one in the NFC because you want that tiebreaker for potentially first, second seed moving forward. And obviously, you know, you don't want to go in an 0-2 streak against teams with winning records after your schedule's been so soft. Then you start to get some creeping doubt into your head about, oh, can we really hang with these tough teams? So Los Angeles takes on a different meaning. Now I think this team will be ready for that. I think this team is very frustrated that they dropped this game. They know that they can perform better than this. They know they missed execution opportunities. So Los Angeles is important. But I was impressed by the way they came out in the second half.
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, this is a team that beat itself that needs to learn not to make those mistakes. I always talk about teams that are always in close games and can't figure it out. This is a team that was in a close game and beat themselves to a certain degree with some of those turnovers. Like I mentioned before, 11 points on the board that should have been there if we had executed correctly, regardless of all the other nonsense surrounding things and narratives and referees and all that crap. So real quick, I want to go to your tweet. You put this out. Describe this game and how you feel exactly in 3 words. And the best responses will be read on this show. And we're going to do that. We are going to do that. Remember to follow the @LockedOnEagles Twitter account. It is live, just live this week. And it is putting out content for you. So don't miss an article. Don't miss a podcast. Don't miss anything at @LockedOnEagles. Let's go through some of them. Okay. My son.
I've got my 6 that I favorited. I've got the 6 that I like.
Okay. My son put out, and I'm very proud of him, Simeon Kissed, @Kissed_Simeon, put out, Wilson always escapes. That's a solid tweet.
Very true. It is. Good work, Simeon. Hey, keep firing off those tweets, son. Only way to do
That's right.
I like, you got to give immediate lip service to Commissioner Evans at the Jake Evans X, who immediately comes in with, wife left me. Very important. Always a crucial tweet. Never have I felt more like Schefter when Evans came in with wife left me. So thank you for that.
You got to know where people are coming from. Do you understand what cup of hemlock means?
Yeah, man. Bryce is done. Bryce is out. Do you get the reference?
No, what is it?
Oh, so hemlock like the poison, right? At least what I'm reading is cup of hemlock is, yo, I'm ending it. The Eagles are 10-2. That's unacceptable. Bryce is gone.
See, Bryce needed the Eagles to win to help the Lions. He's a Lions fan. He's a fellow Scouting Academy fellow. And that's why he's like that. Okay.
Here's one of my favorites. The Goo at GooEY1024 says, is God real? Which I really like, getting immediately existential.
Right.
I love that. Like, did God go to sleep early on Sunday night and just abandon the Eagles? What is this? A nice one, GooEY.
Yeah.
I liked it.
At AaronRaw324 says, awful game plan, Doug. I don't know if I agree with that. I don't know if I agree with that at all. We tried to get the RPOs going early, the quick passing game. We stretched it horizontally, and then we tried some deeper shots as the game went. They really weren't there for us. I mean, that's really not how our offense is constructed. We're built for maybe 1 or 2 deep shots a game, but we ran the ball effectively. I really don't think there was a problem with the game plan. What about you?
Yeah, I thought, you know, Philadelphia came out, didn't move the ball very well. Carson looked off, as we've talked about, right? And so they come out that third drive, 16 plays, 75 yards, 7 minutes and 19 seconds. I was very impressed by that drive. Should have been 7, as we talked about with the Jeffrey penalty. Came in out running the football, physical. And I talked about, you know, while it was happening live, Eagles played a very spread out game for actually all four quarters. And I'm interested to go back to the film and check that out. They really moved the wide receivers into narrower splits, more tight end sets, keeping congestion there in the middle of the field. And they played more physically, downhill running. A giant blunt got moving on that drive, moved the ball very well. That was a great in-game adjustment there by Doug. My biggest pause with Doug was that drive at the end of the first half. I thought you had a real opportunity there, knowing you're getting the ball to start the second. You know, I think that that's where Carson thrives, because you can go tempo and he likes tempo. You got the ball with 4 minutes and 30 seconds left, and you had all your timeouts. So you can go ahead and pass the ball to the middle of the field, incorporate some running plays, but I thought he got uber conservative there. That one bothered me. That's the only Doug game planning that I didn't like in that regard.
Yeah, and I agree with that respect, because when you go up-tempo like that, you simplify the pass coverages, because they don't have time to put in all these different calls and all that stuff. You get softer coverages like that. When you get that up-tempo, you make them play the more vanilla coverages that I think Wentz is more capable of picking apart on a regular basis. So I would agree with you there. Also, Everything Went Wrong by Jay Yorizzo. And let's see. Ooh, we have a enemy reaction at SM Blob. Blade tempering loss. What do you think about that?
Does that mean like he was at the blade and now it's like it's tempered because, wait, he's a Seahawks fan. I'm confused. I don't get that one, to be honest.
Yeah, neither do I. Seahawks fans are not doing Twitter correctly.
Here are the two big ones for me, like, you know, to kind of like put a bow on it and bring us home. Jesus Zoidberg at Jesus Zoidberg says, trust the process. Always important to trust the process, Philadelphia fans. Crucial. Sixers play tonight, Monday night. Enjoy the game. And then also Drew at Drew D. LaWare. This is the most important one to me. Champions learn lessons. I think that's a very good one.
Yeah, I agree.
Right.
We talk about this all the time. This is a tough loss. This is the game that we need to learn from and move from. A young team, or at the very least, a young winning team, not necessarily in age, but when they start coming up, they're going to learn these lessons. They're going to have to go through games like these. They're going to have to show resilience. They might not win every one. It's good for us, and I talked about this a week ago. If we drop one of these next two games, being the Seahawks and the Rams, and that's what we need to kind of knock us back into focus, or at the very least reevaluate things and move forward from there and get into the playoffs. I know that a loss isn't necessary to do that coming into the playoffs. I would love to execute in all facets for the entire season, but in this case, it's not the end of the world. I mean, that's the basic message from all this. We were in Seattle against a team that is likely going to the playoffs now. We played a close game. We cost ourselves some points. We lost the game. It's time to move on. Learn that lesson and go win some doggone football games.
I absolutely agree. And young team, young coach, gonna take lumps. Already at 10-2 off of a loss, still overachieving with what was predicted for them coming into this year. Playoff berth, which, you know, obviously the Eagles failed to seal up the division this week, which they could have done. Washington could have helped them out, and then Philadelphia could have done it against Seattle. Still, Philadelphia looks born to the playoffs, which is a big, big check mark there. Hey, they've got a ton of starters signed through. You know, big ups on the Alshon Jeffrey contract. You know, you can go listen to that reaction pod that we did and released on Saturday. Team's arrows pointing up. They lost a game. I cannot tell you enough, my dear Philadelphia fans. Everything is going to be okay, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything's going to be okay.
All right, so Ben, tomorrow, what do we have on tap for tomorrow? We'll probably do some game time decisions. We want to do pick a prospect. Look, we are on to Los Angeles.
Biggest game of the season coming up against Los Angeles Rams, unquestionably.
And that's going to tell you a lot about this team, how they bounce back from a loss, again, on the road, on the West Coast, and we'll see how the team rebounds here again. We're going to go through these things. We're going to get the schedule narrative. We're going to get some bad calls from the referees. These things happen. What's important is how this team responds to that. And that's my takeaway from all this. This team played a doggone good football game for a lot of this game. There are a few calls that didn't go their way. There are a few plays that they left on the table. It's learning how to become a winning team, to consistently make those plays that make you a champion. And that's what this team is going to have to learn moving forward. And we're going to see if that happens. Ben, anything else for the gentle listeners?
excited about Philadelphia sports moving forward, man. Excited about these Eagles. It's going to be very, very fun to see how they bounce back against Los Angeles. That has the potential to be a crazy, crazy game with those two offenses. It should be fun. But anyway, yeah, Tuesday pod, as per usual, game time decisions, pick a prospect. Hopefully we get some All-22 takes out for you. I don't know how quickly they'll get the Sunday night All-22 up, but if it's up, you can be sure that we will have things to say about it. Brad of Locked On Rams, crossover pod on Wednesday. Always fun with the crossover pod here on the Locked On Network. Thursday and Friday, as per usual, we are previewing the biggest game yet of the season for Philadelphia against the Los Angeles Rams. Got to keep it locked on here, folks.
Yeah, make sure you also follow Locked On Rams, because I've been listening to their show since they became like legitimate contenders for the past, I don't know, 7 or 8 weeks. I started listening to that show, and it is very informative. So go check them out over at Locked On Rams. They'll be on with us Wednesday. Also, remember, rate, review, give us 5 stars. Leave your Twitter handle in the review.
Do it.
And we will enter you for a chance to win a free Pro Football Focus Edge subscription. It's worth $40. Go check out LockedOnEagles.com, your daily source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis. Keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Caca! Big one.